Hi, and welcome to the Becoming Trauma-Informed podcast, where we help you understand how your past painful experiences are affecting your current reality and how you can shift those so you can create your desired future. I'm Dr. Lee, and both myself and our team at the Institute for Trauma and Psychological Safety are excited to support you on your journey. We talk about all the things on this podcast. No topic gets left uncovered. So, extending a content warning to you before we get started. If you notice yourself getting activated while listening, invitation to take care of yourself and to pause, skip ahead a bit, or just check out another episode. Let's dive in. Hello, hello, hello. So we got a lot of new people in the group, and I'm super stoked to introduce y'all to this amazing human right here, this dude. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Dr. Lee. This is my incredible husband, TLC. He's also named Lee. Mm-hmm. So when we started the business and he was coming in a good amount of the time, we were like, okay, this is going to get really confusing. Plus, in case you doubt that there's still misogyny or sexism in 2023, whenever we say Dr. Lee and Lee, people are like, oh, Dr. Lee and Lee. And he's like, no, doctor. Not Mr. So
I will say I kind of have fun with it. Yeah, Dr. and Mr. Lee Cordell.
Yeah, Dr. and right. Mr. Lee Cordell. So cool. Hey. Yeah, so it's just fun to kind of get to play with those assumptions. And this is a way for us to not do that. So if you've never been in one of our containers before where TLC is in there, the thing is I try not to take offense to it, but people will really love you. Like, I think even more than me sometimes. People are like, ah, TLC. And since the beginning of my business, anytime when I just worked with women, when I first started as a coach, anytime TLC would come in, people are like, oh my gosh. And I'm like, man, I should just have you here all the time because people like you and that's cool.
But glad to hear it.
I know, right? So TLC and I, if you've been in our space for a while, you know, if you haven't met him, I'm going to tell you. You know, we've been on a really interesting journey in our relationship these last few years. And part of that is our own individual trauma journeys and recovery resilience journeys, becoming more regulated, psychologically safe humans. And part of it was together. And so we really wanted to come in here and talk about this because this is probably one of the areas that I don't personally see being talked about in a trauma-informed way by most coaches or gurus or experts out there when it comes to relationships. And also, I think it's helpful to hear about our experience and how we've done this because I think it mirrors a lot of people's experiences. And so I personally think we're just a couple steps on the journey in front of a lot of y'all. And so number one goal of today is to really explain how trauma and codependency can show up in a relationship and how being more trauma-informed can help you with that. Second goal is really helping you see what it means and some practical answers to how you can be a more helpful partner. Or, you know, I think a lot of people come in because they want to learn how to get their partner to be more helpful. And I know that was what I had really hoped, was like that it was a him thing and not a me thing. And it turns out it was a both of us thing, but there was a lot more on my side of the street that I needed to address than I realized. So we want to talk about like how you can be a more helpful partner and just how you have the capacity, you have the power and the influence to be able to shift your relationship in a way so that it does feel better for you. And then the third thing is, you know, we're like super transparent about selling at the Institute. You know, we have our TRIPS conference coming up January 5th through 7th. And honestly, I think we've talked about it, like that the nickname of this conference behind the scenes, which now it might just be the nickname in front of everyone because we've said it a couple times, is the TRIPS toe dip, like a toe dip, a taste of what it feels like to be in our 9-month trauma-informed, psychologically safe certificate program. And a lot of people don't know this. TLC has gone through the program twice now. He's also gone through several of our other things. So like he's my note taker a lot of the time when we were first starting. So I would like write the notes for the podcast. I would write the notes for the things, the teachings. He would type them up. He would actually ask questions, which was super great because then it kind of helped me know where to go in the teachings and in the modules. And then he would be on live listening and taking notes. And so he's gone through this and has unintentionally gone on this journey with me. So I think that that is something that is a question we get asked a lot is like, well, did you both go through this? I went through this first. Mm-hmm. And then as I started teaching it and he came on to support in the business, he went through it kind of both as part of the business and personally, right? Mm-hmm. So both of us have lived the trips experience now multiple times. And so, you know, it's one thing to sell something that you're like, oh yeah, I really believe in this because I created it. It's another thing to sell something that you're like, oh yeah, I really believe in this, not only because I created it, but because I've lived it. My husband's lived it. My sister's lived it. Like my friends have lived it. They've gone through it. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, life feels so much better. Even though it's still kind of a dumpster fire right now, it feels better. I'm better able to handle the dumpster fire. So I know I'm full of fun things today. I'm being goofy for you. Okay. So before we get into this, you know, we've talked about definitions being super important. And actually, before I even do that, I'm curious for y'all, like, why are you here? What are you hoping to get out of this? Whether you answer this in the comments or not, but I always think it's really helpful to go into a training with intention, because knowing what you want to hear or knowing what you want to get out of something or what you're hoping to get, it can give you a lot of clarity. So first thing is definitions. So what is codependency, right? This word gets thrown around a lot. And I think that it gets overused a lot. When we talk about codependency, very simple definition, all right? And I personally hate this definition because it shows me how many places I was codependent. But the definition is that you are looking outside of yourself to be okay. You're looking outside of yourself to regulate yourself. You are going external to and looking to your external reality to get your internal state to be good. The thing about being a human is like we're constantly being influenced by our external environment. And the one of the tenets to being trauma-informed and being a psychologically safe person is that you understand that you are the creator of your safety. You are the creator of your reality and you're the creator of your experience. And so while, yeah, like life can throw some really, 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 really awful stuff at you, and that is not your fault. And that is not yours to say, oh, you know, that happened because I called it in. We don't do that here. We don't talk like that in this space. You didn't call it in and you still have the ability to respond to that. So codependency is anywhere where you're like, I want you to want something so that I'm okay. Or I need you to need something so that I'm okay. Or I have to, right? I have to have this thing happen in order to be okay.
Which, just to say too, it's not just between married couples.
No,
like,
no.
You know that.
No. No, it's not.
I think a lot of people think of it just in that terms, you know, when you hear it in modern, you know.
I appreciate you pointing that out, because another term that we talk about in trips is enmeshment. Enmeshment is where people have a either implicit or explicit agreement that like you are going to be responsible for one another. So it's like codependence amplified. And so a lot of times we can see codependence in parenting, right? Where you need your child to be okay for you to be okay. Or you need your parent to be okay for you to be okay. And as kids, really, it's our parents' job to teach us like, hey, you get to actually be responsible for your own regulation. And the people around you shouldn't be consistently activating you to the point that you have to keep going internal and like making yourself okay. So it's a both and for sure. So the definition of trauma bonding is when we have unmet needs, right? When we have patterns that have developed, we talked about this in Here to Help. When we have unmet needs as children and our caregivers or our elders, the people who are in our external environment, don't validate those needs, they invalidate them, they neglect them, they diminish them, they violate them, whatever. We learn that and it affects how we see ourselves. It affects how we see the world. It affects how we see relationships. And so if we have significant and serious or repeated experiences with our caregivers or our elders, where we're either not taught how to internally regulate ourselves, or where we are taught it is your job to be codependent here. It is your job to manage this person's feelings, or it's your job to not give a crap about this person's feelings and just like violate their boundaries and not care about them. When we have those things modeled for us and we take those on, what we find is as we get older, we get into relationships with people who have similar patterns to what we have experienced in the past. And so when we have trauma as kids and we have this repetitive, okay, I don't get my needs met in this way, so this is how I have to respond. When we have those experiences, then when we go out into the world, we do typically one of two things. If we haven't had that trauma resolved, is we either find somebody who is the exact opposite of the person who didn't meet our needs, and then we actually become a lot like our caregiver and we repeat the patterns, or we go find somebody who is just like our caregiver because we know what to do. We know how to show up in relationship with that person.
I know that problem. No.
Right. So if any of you have ever been like, oh my gosh, you're just like my dad, or like, oh my gosh, you remind me of my mother right now. Like, that's one of the worst insults sometimes that we can throw at each other, right? Is saying you're acting just like your mom, or you're acting just like your dad. The reason we say that is because, okay, there's a pattern that's been repeated here. Mm-hmm. So when we think about how do we step out of codependency, how do we heal these bonds that have been forged through trauma? One of the big answers here is kind of what we talked about in Here to Help, that 3-day event that we did last week, which the replays are still in here if you'd like to watch them. And that definition, or excuse me, that thing that we can do is to be helpful, right? And to be helpful in the trauma-informed definition of the word helpful. So the definition that we used in Here to Help, the definition we use for help at the Institute, is to make it easier in the long term for someone to do something by providing assistance, resources, and or support. I'll say that again. To make it easier in the long term for someone to do something by providing assistance, resources, and support. Now, on day 3 of Here to Help, we walk through like each part of those. And so TLC and I, when we were planning out this live today, I was like, oh, like let's walk back through those, but let's do it looking at this from the intimate relationship perspective. And before we do that, because some of you don't know us, some of you haven't been in our space or heard us talk before. TLC's been on a couple podcast episodes. Yeah. We've done a few lives in here. But if you don't know us, like, I just want to be really, really open and honest. Our relationship at times has been incredibly codependent and incredibly traumatic. Like, there have been, like, very dysregulated. There have been particular pockets of time in our relationship that it's been really bad. And there's been an underlying sense of codependency and trauma bonding probably up until about a year ago. Mm. And it's fascinating because that's one of those things that I've said a few times during like one of our really gnarly fights. And I want to be really clear here. Like, there's not abuse. There's nothing like that. Mm. And witnessing anyone who does have that in your relationship, please do not feel shame around that. Like, we've screamed at each other. Like, mm-hmm. We've said very, very unkind things to one another. Yeah. Things that you're like, oh man, if I could rewind 10 seconds, I would never say that again. And we want to be really honest about that because I don't think a lot of people talk about that. I don't think a lot of people don't talk about just how dysregulated their relationships are behind closed doors.
Unless they end. Like, once they end, then you hear.
Yeah, then you hear all the dirty laundry and all the things. You know, we've been together for almost 19 years now. We met when we were 18. And so we have grown up together. And this idea that if you're like, I've never been codependent with my partner, or there's no trauma bonding whatsoever in my relationship, like, write a book. Like, please find a way to share your secrets with everybody because we would all like to know them.
Or maybe look a little deeper.
That's kind of what I had initially for a long time.
I thought, okay, what are you talking about? Right. You know?
And this was something we were actually joking about. Like, when I first started, I started the trauma journey first. And I remember it happened because I became a certified clinical trauma professional and then went deeper into my training. And during one of the trainings, actually had an acute PTSD flashback and realized that there was a lot of abuse and some things, not with TLC, but things that had happened before that I didn't remember. So as I was working through that and was quite dysregulated through that time, I remember at one point TLC being like, you can't just blame everything on your trauma. And I was like, you're right. And I think what it was, it like a year or two later, you were like, okay, you know, when I said that, maybe.
Well, I think as I understood better and better what trauma was, because again, I know I probably said this before, but again, my initial thoughts on what trauma was I think soldiers or, you know, natural disasters, that kind of thing. And I'm like, okay, that's trauma. That's what trauma is. And it took me until like big part of what was awesome about like going through when you would write out notes and I would go through and I was like, oh, kind of learning it a little bit there and then having it reinforced multiple times. I'm like, okay, I understand this in a different way. It definitely took a shift in my understanding.
Yeah. And thank you for speaking to that, because what we're going to share with you today, the reason why we're inviting you to the TRIPS-TODIP, and then the reason why from there we'll invite you into the 9-month certificate program, is because this isn't just like, I learned this once and I'm going to go implement it and it's going to be super easy and everything, like I've got it. Now, I mean, that might be your experience. I don't want to like not speak that over you if that could be your experience. And what I've found is there's a reason we call it a trauma-informed practice, because it's a practice, right? It is something that you do over and over and over. And so, and that you learn at, and you keep coming back to, and you go into deeper levels of over and over and over. So I just wanted to speak to our old patterns, because there was so much codependency, there was so much trauma bonding, there was so much stuff there. And so if that is you, we see you. And if you are like, oh gosh, I'm going through this alone, my partner's not even part of this, like, can this even help? Yeah, it absolutely can, because I did this on my own. And then you just heard TLC's initial response to looking at me coming trauma-informed and understanding my own trauma. So really, I want to empower you, if you're watching this, to go like, oh yeah, I can actually do something here. This can actually, like, by me practicing, this can shift. And again, this is a true shift from codependence to interdependence, which is, I want this man, and this man makes my life so much easier, and I love him, and he is my best friend. And even in our hardest moment, when we were like, are we still gonna stay married? I was like, well, the problem is that even if we don't stay married, you're still my best friend, so I'm still gonna call you every day. And then also, there are other fun things that I like to do with you that I would not necessarily like to give up. So if you're my best friend, then I want to call every day, and there's fun things that we do that I really like maybe we just stay married and work through it. So yeah. So the first part of this definition of help is intentionality. And this is something that when you think about how you want to help your partner, or you want to be helpful, or you want to be helped, intentionality is key. What I think most people don't understand, and I was actually just getting all riled up about this before we got on here, I was doing a bunch of research into nonviolent communication and really like looking at this. The thing about intentionality is, in order for it to be interdependence, where I know that I've got myself, is that we really can't come to this with manipulation, right? We really can't come to this with manipulation.
You can try.
You can try, but yeah, like, how's that working out for you? Because and I did not realize how much I was manipulating myself and TLC. Did you realize how much you were manipulating yourself or me?
No.
When we really looked when we sat down and looked at our communication, and we were like, okay, how can we make life easier in the long term? So much of what we were doing when we were communicating was trying to get life to feel easier in the short term. So we were trying to end the fight. We were trying to get the immediate need met. We were trying to, you know, just handle the situation in the moment. We didn't really have distress tolerance. And what I mean by that is I won't speak for you, I didn't really have distress tolerance. Like, thinking about TLC walking away when we were in the middle of a fight, and letting him walk away, even though cognitively, like logically, I knew he's my husband, we're married, he's not going anywhere. My body in that moment was like, yeah, but he's leaving. He's leaving you, he's abandoning you, he's rejecting you. And interestingly, one of the phrases that TLC would use a lot in that moment is, I'm going to leave you alone. Yeah. He's like, I'm just going to leave you alone so I can calm down and you can calm down. And
which seemed reasonable.
It
to does. Me.
It seems really reasonable. But what we realized is that that was very manipulative, and not from the space of him not trying to get his needs met, but he was saying, I can't handle, right? I can't tolerate the distress that your activation, your anger, your anxiety is causing me. So I'm going to walk away. And then I'm over here not able to tolerate the distress of us distancing ourselves, not disconnecting, but distancing ourselves to be able to calm down, to be able to relax, to be able to get more regulated, and then have a conversation that actually went more calmly. And something interesting over these last few months, as this has really dropped in, as we've both really been looking at manipulation over this last year and these last couple months, we had this conversation this morning. Do you want to tell this about what happened this morning, or do you want me to tell?
No, go ahead. Okay. No,
I feel like I'm talking a lot.
No, you're great.
So when this morning we were sitting down to plan this out, TLC is not. He's becoming more of a morning person.
Yeah.
You are becoming more of a morning person, but I'm the one that's like up at 6 a.m. He's the one that's like stumbling upstairs Kramer style at 8:30, like needs 15 minutes. I'm the one who wakes up and is generally like a songbird. So he laid on the couch and I was like feeling a lot of anxiety. Number one, I hadn't eaten, which I forgot. And number two, I was just like, oh my gosh, I really want to get this planned out because I know it matters to him to get this planned out. I know that I'm the one who can just come up on here and on the fly do an hour live. He's like, let's have an outline, right? So I just like started in. I started in and I didn't realize how amped up I was. And so we're writing notes and he starts talking and I interrupt him and then I ask him something else and he starts talking again and I interrupt him again. And what did you say? How did you say it? He like very gently, I know what you did. He's like, give me your hand. I was like, okay. He's like, listen, I know this is really important to you. And I need to be able to be a little bit silly right now. And I need to be able to wake up a little bit right now because like, that's what I need. And if you need this to be super serious and you need us to be able to like bang this out really quickly, then we either need to reschedule the live or we need to wait a couple of minutes.
And he's, plus I've noticed when I first wake up, sometimes I don't recall everything that was said. I, you know, and so that's one of those things I feel like when it's something that's important to me, I want to make sure I'm able to like remember what was said and there's not like a situation where I'm like, oh,
yeah,
where there's that confusion.
Well, and the thing of this is, before we did our distress tolerance work, he wouldn't have said that. I would have kept going. You would have snapped and not been very kind to me because you're cranky and tired and I'm pushing your buttons. And then I would have taken it very offensively. And I would have been like, oh my gosh, I made a mistake. I disappointed him. I like didn't act the way I should have. I misunderstood something. I would have told myself a lot of stories based in my past trauma and my past painful conditioning. And we would have ended up in a big ass fight and we wouldn't be on this live right now. When you took my hand and then I was like, okay, I was like, you know what? I'm hungry. I haven't eaten. And I was like, I'm going to go get some food. Before trying to, you know, doing the distress tolerance work, understanding how my body recognized things that TLC that you were doing that reminded me of my childhood or past relationships and my brain going, that's dangerous. That's dangerous. You need to handle that. My ability to understand that and practice going, okay. And some of y'all might laugh at this, but this is literally what I do. And I hope when I say this, I do want to provide a little context. I am not joking about death because that's not, actually, I'm not joking at all when I say this statement to myself. This is a way to remind my nervous system of what is actually happening. Is I will ask myself, am I dying? Am I dying? Because it feels like I'm dying. It feels like if I don't handle this right away, the anxiety is so high and the need to solve the thing in the moment is so strong. Or the, I shouldn't say the need, the urge to solve it in the moment is so strong that thinking long-term feels like impossible. And so what I've practiced is going, am I dying? And if the answer to that is no, I go, okay, am I safe? Am I safe? And so Lisa Payne, who's in here, she's also gone through our TRIPS program. She's one of my favorite humans on the planet. She has a saying, in this moment, I am safe. I am safe in this moment. And that helps me so much. It helps me so much to just stop and say that for a moment. And the cool part about our conversation this morning was I didn't have to do that even because your side of your distress tolerance has been learning how to not activate me to that state in the first place.
Well, and then also just to then appease and just be like, okay, well, let's just keep it going because like, it'll like, that's what you want, you know, and that's what, you know, rather than taking a moment, holding your hand, seeing what's going on with you, I think I would. And I used to get more myself and be like, oh, okay, I just need to do whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, that wasn't really good for either of us.
No, because I could tell you didn't really want to do it. And that came from your pattern around and your past painful conditioning and experiences around being quote unquote selfish, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would be my head. In my head, I'm like, even in a situation where like right there, where it was more beneficial to take a minute, have you get some food, take, you know, some breaths, get me kind of woken up, have a little bit of coffee, whatnot, or, you know, some caffeine, and kind of getting more into the right headspace.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I never would have done that because I would have seen me saying like, hold on, let's actually take a minute. I would have been like, oh, that's just me being selfish because she really wants to get this plan now. And if I can't be there for that, well, that's me like either failing or I would see it, you know, as like, as a negative on myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just kind of realizing, no, that's not me being selfish. That's not me being like, that's actually beneficial to both of us in the long term. Like you were saying, yeah, maybe in the short term, like right at that moment, it may have been felt slightly easier, but it was that recognition of like, okay, if you haven't eaten and I'm still tired, what are the chances that this is actually going to go the way either of us expected to go or wanted to go?
Right. And I thank you because I think this shift was, is both of us coming to the point of being more self-centered. And I don't mean that in a negative connotation at all. Both of us have now, instead of going, well, what do I need to do to make them good so I'm good? It's, or how do I need to twist or turn myself up in a way to so that they feel good, so then I can feel good. Instead, now it's, okay, hold on a second. What do I need to be good? And what does he need to be good? And not how do I manipulate myself so that they're happy? It's how do I take care of myself? How do I make it easier for myself so that I can then be helpful? Because, and one of the things that has been, we weren't planning on talking about this, but I know that there's a lot of people in here who struggle with this. One of the things for me has actually been allowing myself to fully feel the full range of my emotions and to not spew them onto people, to not externalize them in a way that it hurts other people, and also to not shove them down or push them aside. And so, you know, this morning, I think I said it to him like three times as I was going in the kitchen. I was like, this is just because I'm hungry. And also, like, I know I'm being, what did I say? I was like, I know I'm being really controlling and I know I'm being really directive, but that's not how I want to show up in our relationship because it's not actually how it feels good for me to show up in our relationship. But right now I can't help it because I'm really hungry. So I'm going to go eat some omelet bites and then we'll come back and we'll try this. And also, like, please, I understand if you're upset with me. That's totally cool. Feel the way you want to feel. And also, I can't help this right now. And he was like, okay, cool. And having you not make a big deal out of those moments, because you're not like, oh my gosh, she's feeling something and I need to fix her so she stops feeling the thing. In the short term, I'm sure that doesn't feel very comfortable for you.
I will say too, though, as we've been doing this more and more, I've noticed my level of distress wise, because yeah, I think before that would have maybe more bothered me. And was there maybe a little bit of like for a split second of like, oh, and then I was like, hold on, no, like I'm gonna sit here for a minute, I'm gonna stretch out, I'm gonna kind of like wake up, and also you can do your thing. And I wasn't like upset with you.
No.
You know what I mean? I think that was the biggest shift for me, at least, of not seeing that and being like, oh, you're doing something wrong, or there's something this, or there's somehow a problem that now needs like, well, this needs fixed. I need to, you know what I mean? It was like, no, you're okay. You're not doing anything wrong. You're hungry. That's a normal human emotion.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a normal human state. And especially for me, I have a familial hypoglycemia thing. And so like hunger is a thing. It's always been a thing. And so the other piece of this that I want to pull forward here too is you know, when we look at the definition of being a helpful partner, we talk about making it easier in the long term. What does it mean to make it easier? Right. And so when we talk about the word easy, we talk about it meaning the absence of difficulty, making something less that is inherently painful, less so, right? Making something uncomfortable a little bit easier to do. And so I think that what we've already talked about speaks to this. And I want to go to a place that a lot of you were like, ooh, a lot of you are like, I'm going to come watch the live because you're talking about this. And I want to go to this place. And I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. It is very hard for me to go to this place. I do want to just provide some context before I go here. Here's the thing. TLC and I, we're pretty deep into like the traditional gender roles. And so like, not in the way that a lot of people think. So I'm going to talk about this in a way, and I'm going to like ask y'all to bear with me for a second, because I've never verbalized this the way that I'm about to. And it does feel a little vulnerable for me to talk about this. When I really sat down and looked at how I was showing up towards TLC, I still remember one of the biggest fights we had. And I remember saying to him, and ugh, it was so mean, you know, talk about things you want to take back. I was like, I don't want to be in a marriage with a little boy. And he said back to me, well, then you should probably stop mothering me because I already have a mom. And I was like, I really don't like you. And what I realized is that I was taking on so much mothering energy, so much. It's my job to make sure everybody is quote unquote good. And the way in which we have defined motherhood, in my opinion, this is my opinion, is it's actually very codependent. We have taught moms that they are responsible for all of their child's needs. And in a less intense way, but also in a pretty significant way, we've taught parents that they are in charge of all of their kids' needs and that they are responsible for meeting all of their kids' needs. There is a difference between being responsible for meeting someone's needs and being responsible for ensuring someone's needs are met. Okay. So the difference in that is, it is my job for my children to be as helpful as possible. It is not my responsibility to ensure or to personally meet every single one of their wishes, desires, and needs. It is my responsibility to make sure that their core needs are met, meaning that their resources are provided, that they feel safe and they feel loved and they feel accepted, and that they have as much choice and agency as possible, barring, you know, harm to them. And that is not the role that I take on as a wife or as a partner with my husband. The role that I take on with my husband is the one that he and I have personally curated and really been intentional about and asked ourselves, what is the easiest for us? What is the way in which when we show up together and when I show up in our marriage that creates an absence of difficulty? And for me, what that means is I think a lot of people see me in business and they see me out there on stages and they're like, oh, you're the one who's the primary income earner and you're all of these things. Like, you're a boss babe. Like, you're a super independent woman. I'm like, y'all, I'm a toddler. Like, I need you to hear this. Okay. I am a toddler. The reason without my husband, I wouldn't make any money. Okay. Or I would make a lot of money and I would be absolutely miserable, because the reason that I am able to show up the way that I do is because it is TLC and I have sat down. We've sat down and gone, what makes our life the easiest? And so for me, it's, I'm going to show up in business and I'm going to show up in my zone of genius here. And then I'm not going to take care of a lot of stuff other places. I'm kind of going to be a little bit of a princess about this or a queen about this. Like, I am going to ensure that everything is handled, and I'm going to ensure that what I have responsibility for is mine, and I'm done taking responsibility for stuff that's not mine. And the biggest thing that I gave up responsibility for was his emotional state. And Terrence Real, who talks a lot about men and depression and the self-esteem of men, talks about this, is that the way in which we now show up in society is we have made it women's jobs to bolster the emotional self-esteem of their partners, especially in heteronormative relationships. And the reason that, and I hear this time and time and time and time again, the reason that I personally believe that so many heteronormative relationships fail is because they have this mother boy energy to them, because nobody has taught us, hey, like, you're not responsible for your partner's emotional state. That is theirs. Like, you do not need to be codependent in that way. And no one has taught men, like, hey, or people, you know, conditioned, raised as men, boys and men, like, hey, it's not her job to make sure you're good. It's your job to make sure you're good. And this comes a lot from how we mother. This comes a lot from how we mother. Because if I mother my son, then I'm going to take care of all of his needs. And if I mother my other two children, that, like, it is their job, I model for them that it is their job to take care of everyone else's needs and not their own, then I am actually perpetuating this. And so, interestingly enough, we had some family over the other day, and I was tired. I think I had worked all day. I had done like a 4-hour VIP day, and I'd done some stuff, and I was laying on the couch, and TLC kept checking in and going, what can I get you? What do you need? And the family who was over, they were like, oh, like, look at you getting the royal treatment. And I was like, this is a normal Tuesday. Okay. And the reason this is a normal Tuesday is not because I am, like, selfish or the relationship is one-sided. Like, it feels really good. It feels easy for him to provide for me that way. And then it feels easy for me to go run an institute. And then it feels easy for me to come back home and play with my kids. And it feels easy for him to make sure everything's taken care of from a finance bills perspective and from a house perspective and all of those things. Like, this is what feels easiest for us. And in order to get here, I had to own that a lot of what I was feeling resentment around towards you for how you weren't showing up was my doing.
And also, in some ways too, my trauma wise of just terms of, like, views that I had of masculinity and, you know, being the man, you know. And I had some family members who were the opposite, you know what I mean, where it was the man controlled everything, and it was the really old school, you know, woman has no real voice. And I had some family members, and I always was like, I don't want to be that. Like, I want to, and if anything, I went so hard trying to stay away from that.
Yeah.
That, you know, I'm like, that doesn't work either. You know, it's, you know, that pendulum, if you will. Yeah. Just swing it to the other direction isn't always the answer.
Yeah. You know, we had an argument the other day, right when I was starting to get really sick. And when I get sick, I get super dysregulated. It's something we've learned of, like, look, just nothing that comes out of my mouth is...
Luckily, it happens rarely.
Yeah. Right? But, like, we both just went, you know what? Let's just... He was like, just go to bed. Like, just go watch Boston Legal. Oh, my gosh. Can you please let our distinguished gentleman into the room? Thank you. Our dog has decided he has to be with us right now. So, you know... when I was really sick and I was really dysregulated, I was just kind of like, I went back into codependent mode. And, you know, I'm already in this uncomfortable situation. And I was so, so impressed with, I was so appreciative of you, TLC, because he literally stopped me at one point and he was like, look, you can say whatever you want to say and you can do whatever you want to do. And I don't have to sit here and listen to it. And if you're going to be mean to me or you're going to say, like, shit about me right now, I don't have the space for that. So, like, you get big and you do your thing. And also, like, do you want me to stay? Because if you want me to stay, you need to stop. And I was like, okay. Right. And what's so fascinating is before he wouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. And I would just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And what I realize is we've seen this pattern in our kids.
And then I would get upset and then it would start becoming a thing. And it's like, it didn't need to be.
So, you know, this absence of difficulty for us is him being more directive and corrective and, like, providing the structure and saying, this is how things are, you know, going to go. And he's doing that from a place of, like, really caring about me and being devoted to me and our family. And, like, me being able to just, like I said, be a toddler. Like, when we go places now, half the time I don't bring my wallet. Like, half the time I'm like, where are we going? What's going on? You know? And I know that that seems kind of silly, and it is because I feel so safe. I feel so safe. I'm like, TLC's got it, and he's told me he's got it, so I don't have to worry about anything unless he specifically tells me to worry about or to do something, and then that's the thing that I'm going to concern myself with. And when it comes to the Institute, when it comes to my business, like, the agreement there is he's like, go. I'm not the expert there. I'm not the one who's going to tell you what to do. I trust you. That's your place. And like, I'm not going to, and he knows that I really love it. If he sees me doing something that he's like, are you sure that's what you want to do? I'm not going to freak out on him anymore, because I know he's not, he is coming from a place of devotion. He is coming from a place of regulation. I know half the time he doesn't even want to say the thing to me because he's like, I really care about you and I don't want to say something that in the short term feels shitty for you to hear. And in the long term, I think it's important to say it.
And I will say it took me a little while, and still sometimes I still maybe need like a second to be like, okay, like it's actually okay. All right. Like, yeah. It is, because there still is. There's a little part of it that's like, wait, is this okay? Like, no, yes, this is actually, you know, and it is one of those where, that in terms of the provision and stuff of seeing that, like, there are other ways to protect and to provide, like when you're sick, even still, and I don't mean this, but like letting you, but like to keep trying to work, to keep pushing through, because you will push through.
Yeah.
That is generally what you do, but yeah. You don't then later you're like, okay, you get also burned out physically and mentally. And then it's, you know, you tend to feel worse for longer or things like that. And it's like, yeah, it is hard in the short term too when you're not feeling well, but it's like, no, what is actually better for you? What is better for us? What is, you know, but yeah, it's like, it is getting better though. you know, but it did take me it was not an easy, quick process.
And you coming from the place of like, and I want to be really clear here, you anticipate my needs now a lot of the time. Now, he's not going, oh, I want to make sure she's good for, you know, sexy time later tonight. So like, let me take care of her right now. That used to happen. I used to do the same thing. Like, let me make sure I'm taking care of things. So like, that was an area for us that, you know, there was a lot of manipulation that came in too. I don't know if anyone else has had this experience, but I was taught to objectify myself, my body. And a lot of men are taught to objectify women's bodies too, and vice versa. Yeah. Quid pro quo. Like, I do this and then she'll do this. And that's manipulative as heck, right? And there were so many times I was doing that where I was trying to manipulate my no or my not now or my not like this into a yes to make him happy and vice versa. And, you know, like just even being able to own our needs around that and be honest with each other of like, yeah, I would love to, my ability to say, hey, I'm feeling really anxious about this right now because I need to talk something through first. And I know that that typically turns you off. And also I'm not going to be able to get turned on unless I get this out of my head. So like, what should we do right there? There's this, we're even able to have this conversation of like, okay, well, what do we do? And it doesn't mean that in the moment, that need of sexual gratification, that desire for sexual gratification is going to get met for both of us. But what it does mean is that our need for safety with each other, our need for psychological safety and our need for agency, those get met. My ability to choose whether what I do with my body, your ability to choose what you do with your body, and then us being able to like bring our full selves and own how we're feeling, that's way more important than a moment of sexual gratification.
And also, and knowing that's the case and knowing that's what's going on when there are times like that, at least to me, I don't know if this is an everybody thing, but it makes it so much better in general, because then it's like, you're not having to worry like, oh, is she actually into this? Is this something, you know, she's trying to just do because you feel like especially obliged, you know?
Yeah.
Like I that would always, you know, bother me. And now it's like not having to think, is that the case? Is that what's going on right now?
Yeah. You like, can trust my yes. Yeah, right.
Exactly. Cause knowing that there could be a no, makes me realize that the yes, that in that case, yeah, you can definitely trust it way more.
Yeah. You know, so there's two other pieces to this. The next piece is that long-term piece and that mutually beneficial piece of, it's kind of the same way as in parenting. And notice how many parallels there are between parenting and between intimate relationships. Remember, that's our model for how we are loved, how we are treated, how we are nourished, how we are nurtured, how we are appreciated. All of those things come from our interactions with our caregivers. So I think a lot of people make that really wrong. They're like, oh my gosh, you're talking about this intimate, potentially sexual relationship here, but like, you're also talking about parents. Well, no, we're talking about love. We're talking about connection. We're talking about the meeting of needs. And you learn that through modeling. And so, you know, when you think about mutually beneficial and that short-term, long-term piece. So one of the other things that we've done that has actually really shifted our relationship is he provides most of the discipline with the kids. He is the one that's going to discipline. He's going to correct and direct the kids. And gosh, can I just say how good that feels to not have to, like our son, who's, you know, 11 and a half, we've noticed in the last 6 months, he does not listen to me when I step into that directive, corrective place. However, if I gently ask him to do something, that is when he will listen to me. And I'm noticing like he is becoming, from a socialization perspective and from a biological perspective, he's really stepping into that journey into manhood. And so it makes a lot of sense that me trying to discipline him, he's like, lady, I'm as tall as you are almost, like, and it's not any, that's important. It's important for our kids to separate that way. And you had a really good example of the long-term piece versus it not feeling good in the now with the kids. And then also with me.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the big things is just really, especially now that our kids at least are old enough, really kind of like pointing out why, giving them the why at least. And again, I know, especially like ADHD wise and stuff like that, it seems to be why being a really big thing, but like, two, they know people. Your kids generally will see other kids and recognize like, oh, there's some kids that just don't listen to the teachers. They don't pay any attention. And I'm like, and you see how that causes, like, especially Charlotte was saying, like, oh, it drives me crazy because then the teacher can't teach and I can't learn and this and that. And I'm like, yeah, because there are longer term consequences that you can't easily see. And I think sometimes when they kind of start recognizing that, it almost makes it even easier when it comes to like, hey, there's chores. I need you to do chores, not having where it's like, oh, you're just coming in. But it's like when they really see the benefit as well as like, oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. But discipline is a good thing to have, guys. And like, here's why. And they're like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
And it seemed to go really well. Ray actually came and said something the one day of like, okay, I completely understand why you said these things, you know, why you were disciplined. Cause yeah, that makes sense. And actually they even said, thank you. And I was like, well, this is kind of,
I know.
I don't know. This is cool, but like,
well, and that is, you know, not every parent-child relationship is going to look like that just because every kid is different. Every kid has different needs. And I think one of the things that we realized was just how much pressure we were trying to put on ourselves to go like, well, we both need to equally discipline. We both need to show up this way. And by the way, I just want to say this to anyone who is single parenting out there or co-parenting, like I will buy you a coffee. Like, I mean, you are having to fulfill both roles at once right now. I want to just honor that and witness that. And part of really learning, okay, when I, or and doing this work for yourself is, okay, if and when I get into relationship with someone again, how do I ensure that this feels the way that I want it to feel? And so I just want to, if you're like, well, there's no point in me doing this because I can't really, right now you're having to fulfill both roles. And if you didn't have to fulfill both roles, what would feel good? Right? Like what, how would it feel good to be in relationship with a partner? How would it feel good to be more regulated with a partner? But, you know, TLC had a lot of conditioning growing up around not really having to be accountable. Like there wasn't, part of the reason that chores is important for us and that it has been so healing for him to take over the discipline and for me to get to do more of the like loving and caring when they're sick or when they have like a physical or like a nurture need. The reason that that's felt so good is because the household I grew up in, chores were like really, really, that was a big thing. And there were, it was like a big deal if you do not do your chores or do what was expected of you. TLC had kind of the opposite scenario of, I'm pretty sure I taught you how to do laundry at 19. So
I was definitely, I think I had you do my laundry still.
Yeah.
I
think it was no, in my 20s. That's one of the reasons your mom told me to stick around was because you tried to get me to do your laundry. And I was like, I will not do it for you, but I will teach you how. Mm-hmm. And the thing of that is that him stepping into more of the, okay, I'm going to hold myself accountable and I'm going to provide the structure for everyone here. And me asking myself, okay, you know what? I have been so structured my whole stinking life. Like, I need to be able to flow a little more. I need to be able to relax a little more. I need to be able to trust him and trust my children that they're going to do what they say they're going to do. The other thing about mutually beneficial is I think society just says so many different ways that we're supposed to do things. And I really wanted to speak on this. You know, we already talked about the monetary part, y'all. Like, this is why I said we follow like traditional gender roles or polarity or masculine, whatever terms you want to use, to a point. And then we also went, okay, but like, how does this work for us? Is because there is no box when it comes to your relationship. And when everybody has different trauma and everybody has different ways of liking to get their needs met. And so you got to find the way that works for both of you or all of you, if you're in a polyamorous relationship. You know, I've used this example before, but dinner, right? Like technically I should be the one cooking dinner, right? And he should be out bringing home the bacon. I should be the one frying it up in the pan. Guess what? That's, I don't know if any of you have seen grocery prices in 2023 or you have seen like our situation of one solo income is not the norm and it is not something that most people can survive on. And so likely if you're in a partnership, both of you are working or both of you have a lot of stuff on your plate. And the idea that like you have to do things because number one, you've always done them that way. Or number two, because society tells you have to do them that way. Is BS. And so like when it comes to dinner, TLC is a better cook than I am. I don't follow steps well. So I leave stuff out. I leave out ingredients. I leave out steps. I'm like, why does this work? And so if it's dinner time, TLC, I'm not asking everybody what's for dinner. TLC was out of town for 7 days. And I think I ordered food every day. I think I cooked like two nights. But the thing is that's what works. If it's my responsibility to that night, if he said, hey, I'm busy, I need you to do dinner, or I don't feel well, I need you to do dinner, we're ordering food. He knows that. If he's like, hey, I want to cook, and he asks what I want, like I'll answer him, but also I trust he's going to make what he wants to make. And so there is no box around that. Like you're able to look at what works for both of you. And then the last thing is that provision of assistance and support and resources. And I think we've touched on this already, but just knowing that like sometimes less is more. And I'm talking to you, other hyper-independent women who were taught to manage everybody's feelings around you all the time and make sure you met every single person's needs and also worked out and ate healthy and got 8 hours of sleep and looked gorgeous and all the things, right? Those of you who were taught to have it all and be it all like I was, what I have realized is that learning to be trauma-informed has been so helpful in staying regulated when someone else needs help and actually checking in with myself and going, is this a place that any of my assistance or resources are needed? Or is this a place where the most helpful thing I can do is allow this person or allow my partner to find his own resources or to ask me first? Once he's determined he needs something.
Well, and it feels, and I think that's the thing too, maybe that people don't realize is that feels good for me too.
Yeah.
Like not just in a your place, but like being able to provide that, being able to be like, oh yeah, okay, I can cook pretty well and I can actually do this. And this is some way in which too, like another way, but a way I can contribute.
Yeah.
And be able to do things. I'm like, that feels good for me as well. It's not like for you, that would probably feel like work. Yeah, you know, like you're having to do all the cooking. You're like that would feel like work for you. Whereas for me, I'm like, oh, okay, let me come up with like two or three different, you know, options and then kind of figure it out and like cook it up and see how it comes out. I'm like, that's enjoyable to me. So it's like in some ways, if you were following the prescribed notion,
yeah,
well, I wouldn't get to cook even though I enjoy it. And you yeah. would be doing something you didn't enjoy.
It's and our like, kids would hate their life because right. everything they ate would suck. So like really it's just a reminder that you get to check in and go, what is it that would actually feel really good for me? And this is a huge part. People don't think about this as being part of being trauma-informed. This is a huge part of being trauma-informed because it's self-regulation work. It's that distress tolerance work. It's being able to be aware of where the past painful conditioning comes in and respond to it, be sensitive to it in a way that's super supportive. So I hope that this has been helpful for y'all. And I have one more question for you, babe.
Yes.
You know, you've gone through all these experiences. I know you're like, dude, people should get in the toe dip. We were already having this conversation separately. Like, I'm not just, yes, he's biased. And also he was saying this without prompting. What has been the best part for you of becoming more trauma-informed? Like, what did you not expect that you're like, wow, this is so much better?
I think in a big way, it's my assumption, I guess, maybe along that was the idea like that if I were to become trauma-informed, we would have maybe a better relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But in so many other aspects of life, I've really noticed where there's been a lot more benefit too.
Yeah.
With the kids, when it comes to parenting, when it comes to just mental health-wise,
mm-hmm.
recognizing, I feel like, and again, I'm not, did not go into things, but I feel like mentally speaking-wise, I'm in the best place.
Okay. I know that we weren't going to go here. And I want to be careful with this because I don't want anyone to, I'll start with this. I'm still on antidepressants. And can you tell people what happened in the last couple of months?
Oh, yeah. No, I've actually kind of gotten off of them. It's been one of those things that I had thought about for quite a while, but I had struggled in the past with more major depression, you know, especially, and granted, it's been quite a few years now that I've had like significant issues. So there was a little bit of fear around that, but that's been something that once I've stopped, I think I even thought in my head of like, oh, this is going to be a little more rough. This is going to be, I'm going to have some of these issues, and just recognizing as I've been going through this, like, okay, I feel great now. Do I feel more emotion at sometimes? Yes. But I think that's in part, like that's a good thing.
Well,
being able to feel more, you know, it's like, but I don't feel more sad. If anything, I've recognized working through some of that trauma, being able to heal that now, being back to, you know, baseline or, you know, what have you. I'm like, I feel better than I did even before when I was on meds, and especially way better than before that even still. So it's like, for my own mental health in some ways, I don't think, and I know it seems silly to think like, well, that would be, but in my head, that wasn't where I thought the benefit was going to come from.
Same.
I was thinking more specifically like interpersonal.
Yeah.
Like it didn't even occur to me that, oh, wow, like actually I'm going to feel a lot better with myself, with who I am in terms of self-esteem, in terms of just like, it's really benefited in a lot of ways like that.
I think the other thing that's just been so utterly surprising around all of this is the idea of either of us coming off of our meds and being able to really like hold ourselves emotionally and work through those things and feel safe doing that without the other one being scared or the other one being like trying to control. I that wouldn't have even felt like a possibility in my brain.
And actually, I do want to thank you for that, because that has been something I've not, you know, it's one of those, I feel like I worried way less in general than I feel like I would have, but going through all of this, you've been amazing. No, like I just
make me cry.
Not trying to, but seriously though, I'm just seriously, I just really appreciate that, because you have let me kind of deal with myself a little bit in this, and but having that knowledge that it's not dysregulating you.
Yeah.
You're not sitting there the whole time thinking, oh no, what's going to happen? Is he going to do this? Like not having that has been really helpful personally even.
Yeah. Yeah, this is like the where we are now is beyond my wildest dreams when, you know, 15 years ago. And I really do attribute it to this work. I really do. Okay. And then there was one more thing that you mentioned before this that I'm like, there's some low hanging fruit for getting, all right. I'm not bribing anybody. I'm not encouraging anybody to join for this reason. And also it's a good now it's my second favorite part of doing this work with you, but what was the other part that you said before?
No, just in terms of like the increase, as our relationship's gotten better and we work through this, the increase in the frequency of, you know, having fun times, if you will.
And just the quality.
For sure.
Yeah.
I feel like in so many more ways as we've been closer, and not just like not fighting because, well, we're trying not to fight or whatever else.
Yeah.
As we felt that much closer, I think, and again, you can tell me, you know, your side, but like I felt closer to you and it's helped me to really connect to you more.
Mm-hmm.
And it has made everything kind of, especially in that realm, like better, like a lot better. Like,
kids I don't are know. Definitely grossed out a lot more, yeah. Not because we're that, but they're like, we'll be kissing in the kitchen. They're like, oh, and I'm like, would you rather us not like yeah, we were before?
I love your.
But I agree with that. I feel like I feel so much more safe. I feel so much more regulated, and I feel safer telling you what I want. I feel safer being playful with you and like and experiencing new things with you, because I trust that however I feel about it, whatever my response is like, you're going to value it. And that makes a huge, huge difference. And I wanted to share that because, like, I mean, the fun times were never not fun with us. And like, that was another thing that just really surprised me, was just when we're able to really feel our feelings without taking responsibility for each other's feelings and being codependent, it's amazing how much deeper I could go into the experience of just being connected with you and being intimate with you. And just even in conversation, mm-hmm. like right here, like we're like, we've been holding hands the whole time. So, okay. So I'm going to drop the link for the TRIPS conference below. I hope that you all will consider joining us. And really, I want to, even if it's not this, you know, even if it's something else, like, just know that there are resources for you out there on this. There is hope for you around these things. And we couldn't have had this conversation 2 years ago, yeah. 3 years ago. And I fully believe that doing the trauma-informed, psychologically safe work is how we got here. So if you have any questions about the TRIPS conference, or if you're like, I already know I want to be in the 9-month certificate, you can send me a DM. I'm happy to answer them for you. And we'll see you next time. Bye, y'all. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Invitation to head to our show notes to check out the offers and connections we mentioned. Or you can just head straight over to institutefortrauma.com and hop in our email list so that you never miss any of the cool things that we're doing over at the Institute. Invitation to be well and to take care of yourself this week, and we'll see you next time.